The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning, good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's another Tuesday. How are you all keeping out there? It's 4 minutes past nine. It's the 25th of June 2020. Four, and our lines are open for you right now to get involved in the conversation. We have a busy show as always lined up for you. If there's any issues that you wish to raise, drop us a note on microphone's all wrong. Sorry, let me fix this microphone. Ignore the noise. There we are. How's that? 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. 07491 25,000. You want to give us a call. And your emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And if it suits you, where you are, where what you're doing, you can watch the show at home on your smart TV. Go into the YouTube app, search Highland Radio. There we are. Boom. HD. You can also watch us on your Fire Stick or anything with the YouTube app or connected to your TV, of course. And take us with you on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. We're on the X platform as well, broadcasting across the world. Right, let's have a look at the newspapers today. As I say, we've a lot to get through, so we'll crack on with this. And the speculation that Charlie McConnell may get this job has now been ended. Minister for Finance Michael McGrath is expected to be nominated as Ireland's next European Commissioner following discussions between the coalition party leaders last night. Taoiseach Micheál Martin is due to bring a note on the nomination to Cabinet this morning to officially begin the process. It's expected that should Cabinet approve Mr. McGrath's nomination, which of course they will, for the role of Commissioner, which has an annual salary of around 300k, not bad, not bad. He will then tender his resignation as minister in the coming days, with his successor due to be appointed shortly. Our friend, the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien, is one of those shortlisted for that job. There is speculation within political circles that potential successor to Mr. McGrath could be Minister of State in the Department of Enterprise, Dara Cleary, Minister of State in the Department of Transport, Jack Chambers, or Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien. It's a funny old system we have, isn't it, in that, you know, the economy of a country, you'd imagine, is one of the most important things. But another job comes up in Europe and we can just say, well, the Minister for Finance, we don't really need him here. You know, someone else can do what he's doing. So we'll send him off to Europe to be a commissioner. And sure, there's someone else around the table. Sure, we'll just elevate them to the position of Minister for Finance, like looking after a multiple tens of billions of euro economy. The fellow that's in charge of it now, he can just, by choice, head off to Europe after 18 months. And sure, there's someone else that can just do that job. It kind of talks to, really, it could be me, couldn't it, really? Or could be any of us listening that could be appointed to that job. Because it can't be terribly important if you can just up sticks 18 months into it and go and get a better job yourself. And not only that, but your employer is promoting you to that job. As I say, it would make you wonder, really, what's the point of it all sometimes. And that's not a political comment. It's a systems comment, by the way. On to the Irish Independent. The local elections brought almost no progress for women in politics as the two main parties failed to select at least 30% female candidates. New research published by the National Women's Council of Ireland said the number of council seats won by women this month increased by only one to 247. This means female representation at local level is still hovering at 26% in Ireland and below the European average of 35%, and we're at 8%. So you can see that in Donegal we're well behind the national average and a mile behind the European average. The lack of progress was particularly blamed on Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Only a quarter of Fianna Fáil's candidates and 29% of Fine Gael were women. Now, the bottom line is the only way that works, there's no point throwing extra candidates in, because that often doesn't work and it splits the vote and it's not helpful. Some of the lads are going to have to step aside, really, for that to change in any significant way. I'm not saying they should. I'm saying, though, if you are, you can't just put women in if they've got no chance of being elected, or if you're splitting the vote, or they're sweepers for the well-known male candidate in a particular area. So the only real way any change like that will happen is if the parties say, right, you've had a good run at it now, lads, if you could just step aside and we're going to actually run female candidates this time. Will that ever happen? I don't know. Should that happen? I don't know either. But nothing's going to change really in any meaningful way until either these people naturally move on to something else or step down, or they're replaced at election time. The Irish Daily Mail reports of a spike in women taking cocaine. This is just one element of this report, and it depends which way you consume your cocaine. More women than ever are seeking help for cocaine addiction, with quantities of the drug available in Ireland at record levels. Over 1,300 women sought treatment to tackle their cocaine habit last year, with most aged in their early 30s, a new report published today by the Health Research Board has found. More than one in five cocaine users are now women, with the number seeking help rising by an astonishing 388% in 6 years. The rising cocaine use is changing the landscape in terms of treatment demand in Ireland, said Dr. Amri Karu, research officer at the Health Research Board. Cocaine is the main problem drug for nearly half of new cases to treatment, but also one in three cases returning for treatment. Now, we've discussed this in the programme last week, and just to underline the fact that this is not a somewhere else problem, this is also a Donegal problem. Remember, we spoke to Donna McGee, an addiction service lead with the HSE in this region, where she said alcohol is still the most abused drug, but cocaine is a problem.
Cocaine use is very big as well at the moment. Cocaine use is very common. We also see...
Has that moved up?
We have seen in the last 5 or 6 years a huge surge and increase in cocaine use.
So that aligns with what we've just heard nationally as well, as I say, just to underline the fact that this is not a somewhere else problem. To the Irish Daily Star now, in Aer Lingus. And pilots' representatives are to attend separate meetings at the Labour Court today as efforts intensify to avert planned industrial action. The airline has already cancelled more than 200 flights, affecting 35,000 passengers, ahead of the action by members of the Irish Airline Pilots Association amid a bitter dispute over pay. Aer Lingus said 80% of the cancelled flights have already been rebooked, reaccommodated or refunded. And it's a complicated one for Aer Lingus to back down on, because if they... match the demands of pilots, which are really significant, 20-25%, bringing the average pay up to around 300,000 plus, then other staff are going to say, well, we want a slice of that action as well. And there's an awful lot of staff involved in an airline than just the pilots, of course. The pilots, I think it's only 200 pilots affected by this. But also, of course, Aer Lingus is part of AIG. AIG has a number of carriers, and Aer Lingus is not performing fantastically. And also their wages are already a much higher percentage of their overall spend than other airlines in the AIG group. So the pilots might get something, but I don't think Aer Lingus are going to be able to go all the way to meet their demands, and I don't want the don't know what the middle ground is. I was watching the news actually at the weekend, and the pilots were out doing sort of a press release, and the outfits are really old-fashioned, aren't they? I mean, they look so fancy with their hats and the gold bar. They looked like they were about to take the Titanic across the Atlantic Ocean, to be honest with you, rather than sort of flying a sky bus over to Malaga. But anyway, that's the outfit, and I suppose they did look smart. The scramble's on for Taylor Swift tickets. As you know, she's coming to Ireland in just 3 days' time, which is quite handy, because I think there's a number of people that are going to the Saturday show or the Sunday show. Is it Saturday and Sunday she's on? And also now it works out very well for watching the Donegal game. So some people have kind of hit the jackpot if they're lucky enough to get Taylor Swift tickets, but lots and lots of people out there. And as you can imagine, we've been contacted by many people desperate to get tickets. The power Taylor Swift, and every generation has it, but the power she has over younger people in terms of the demand to see her is something else. But that means mums and dads are going to get desperate. So be careful you don't get scammed, particularly in the last couple of days as things get desperate. Bank of Ireland has issued a ticket scam warning to fans of global music sensation Taylor Swift ahead of her Dublin gigs this weekend, highlighting the likelihood of multiple fraudulent attempts by con artists trying to reach out online to ticketless Swifties. The bank has produced a list of signs to look out for if in doubt, bearing in mind that if someone seems or something seems too good to be true, it probably is. The request to simply make a bank transfer to the account of a stranger could stop you in your tracks. That's big scale stuff. Lower scale stuff, by the way, if you are being contacted on social media by some dodgy clone accounts claiming to be from Highland Radio, please don't click the links. I did note someone contacted us to say that there was a link sent to them saying they were a competition winner. Unfortunately, it's completely outside of our control, but we will not contact you in that way Certainly not seeking any bank details. So please, if you do receive that, you could do us a wee favour actually and flag the account to Facebook as a scam, if you don't mind. But certainly, please don't click any links. I wish there's something we could do to stop it, but there isn't. So just be really careful there. And finally, in The Sun, a kidnap offender obsessed with Holly Willoughby plotted to abduct her from her home, then assault and murder her, a court heard yesterday. Security guard Gavin Plum, 37, intended to overpower and drug the star and her TV producer husband Dan Baldwin with the help of an accomplice, jurors were told. He allegedly told a US undercover cop he had been talking to online, we'll jump the outer wall, break in, chloroform both her and her husband, tie both up and zip ties and gag both. Plum said they would drive Holly, 43, to an abandoned location where she would be blindfolded, raped and murdered by having her throat. Well, I won't go into the very graphic. I've probably already gone too far in relation to that. But suffice to say, this person said some very, very sick things, allegedly. Holly waived her legal right to anonymity over charges against him of encouraging and assisting rape. So that's what was said there. And that trial is ongoing. Can you imagine being the target of something like that? It's really horrendous. Of course it's horrendous. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Or please give us a call if you wish on 074 91 25000. Now, we got an email on Friday that read as follows. Dear Greg, I'd like to acknowledge my young neighbour, Keelan Dolan Friel, who bravely saved a man in Manor Cunningham yesterday, the 21st of June, from a house fire. Keelan was returning to his papa's house in Corky when he noticed the house with smoke coming from it. And on it goes. That came in from Laura. And I can say to you now that Keelan Dolan joins us on the programme. Keelan, thanks very much indeed for your time today.
How's it going?
I'm doing all right, Keelan. I'm doing okay. So come here. Pick up the story there. So you're in the car with your granddad. Is that right? Coming from Newton on Friday.
Me and my grandfather were up on Newton having a about lunch over, and we came on the house about it burning then.
And this is a neighbour, this is a Eugene's house. So you noticed smoke coming from it, did you?
Me and Granda were passing, and Granda noticed the smoke through it at first, and then whenever he'd stopped the Jeep then, we'd seen the house was burning, so it was in.
And how badly was the fire at this point?
At this point it was kind of smouldering, so it was bulking up gradually, like, so it was kind of getting worse as it went on, like.
Right, and did you know the gentleman that lives in this house? Like, were you able to shout him by name, Keelan?
I knew him. I have no man more late, so I have.
All right, okay. So what happened next then? What did you do? Was he able to respond at that point?
Well, the first I got out and I went a little over and I shouted his name. There was no response, and I had gone into the house, so I had, but I couldn't hear him or nothing. I went outside then for a bit of air, like, and when I shouted a second time and he responded to me then. And that's when I knew that he was in the house then. I went and get him. I went and got him then, like.
So when you went in the first time, was it very smoky?
I couldn't see nothing around me but smoke, so I couldn't just... It was just the whole place was just completely covered, so it was black smoke.
Unbelievable. And were you familiar with the layout of the house, or did you just sort of try and feel your way around?
I was never in the house before. I just had to listen to his voice to try and find my way to him, so I did.
My God. And at what point then, whereabouts in the house was he? Like, I mean, obviously you went in the front door, did you? Was he in a back bedroom or kitchen, or where was
he? He was in, like, the kitchen, sitting room, kind of all one in the house. So he was in the middle of all the smoke, the heaviest part of it. So it was, like, I was trying to find him with the problem.
So it was so smoky, you literally couldn't see him even when you were in the same room as him?
No, I just had to follow. I just keep speaking to him and just follow the noise of his voice, sort of try and find him, and then eventually got him, sort of, then.
Right, and then you were able to help him out, guide him out back out of the house?
I got reached for him, sort of, and I just carried him out of the house, sort of, as quickly as I could. And it just got worse then after I got him out of the house, but thankfully I got him out in time.
And you know, what we do know, Keelan, is it's often the smoke that kills and the fire is secondary. Given the level of smoke that he would have been inhaling and couldn't avoid, you know, you got him just in time, I would say.
I would say I did, and I was very thankful I got him out when I did now.
And, like, were you not concerned for your own well-being, Keelan?
I suppose adrenaline just kind of really took over, so it did, and I just, first thought was just go on and get him, like.
Amazing. And then you got him out then and rang the emergency services. Maybe your granddad rang the emergency services. You stayed with him then until they came.
We stayed with him, yeah, until the emergency services came then, yeah.
And we think Eugene's doing okay, isn't that right?
As far as I know, no, he's doing well now.
And in terms of, you know, did you have to get checked over yourself? Because, I mean, I know you used a damp rag, and was that your idea, your granddad's idea? Who came up with that idea?
It was just myself and I was at the door, so it was like between me and granddad, we were just standing there, and I just reached the hood of my jumper, so I didn't, and I just bolted around my face, so I didn't went in.
Okay. So that offered you some protection, but you couldn't have tolerated the smoke in there for much longer either. Did you get checked over, obviously, because there's going to be some smoke inhalation for you, Keelan?
Yeah, the paramedics, they came over and checked me over and all at the scene, so that, but that was grand, so thank God.
And thank God Eugene's seemingly doing okay, but the house, obviously after that, the house just went up completely.
Just moments after I got him out of the house and got him kind of settled down into the Jeep, that's when she went up in a blaze, so she didn't know when this blew out there at all.
Wow. Okay, I mean, what an amazing thing, Keelan, for you to do. You went in twice, like, and saved this man. It really is quite remarkable. You know, everyone's very, very proud of you, but I'd say particularly your family and all. And your granddad would have been worried until he seen you coming out the second time as well, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. No, he was just standing there waiting for us to come out, so he was. No. He was growing grateful to see us coming out in one place.
Yeah, okay. So, then were you back at work then Monday again?
I was back at work that evening.
That evening. Jeez, you're some boy, Keelan. You really are. It's absolutely amazing. And we've been contacted by numerous people. I don't know what you're like with praise, but we've been contacted by so many people who are just flabbergasted, amazed with what you did. In I think there's no doubt saving Eugene's life and, you know, taking risks yourself. But as you say, the adrenaline was up and you didn't think twice about going in. In fact, you went in twice.
Yeah, it's just the spur of the moment thing. So to think back on it all now, it's kind of just a blur. So it was like it all just happened so quickly. So it did.
Yeah, because it's traumatic for you as well, Keelan. You know, it's I know we're talking about the heroics and it is, but I mean, it's a traumatic enough experience for you as well, going in there blind like you did.
Oh, definitely. No, it's not something I've ever done before now, and I wouldn't be in a hurry to do it again.
Yeah. Well, listen, you did it once, you did it twice, in fact, and you saved Eugene. And listen, it's amazing, and we're all very proud of you, Keelan, and we really appreciate you coming on the radio to talk about it.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. Take care. That's Keelan Dolan. What a hero. And he has to get recognition for what he did there. As you heard from Keelan himself, him and his granddad passing Eugene's house, noticed smoke coming out of it, stopped, shouted for Eugene, heard nothing. Keelan went in, come back out again, then heard Eugene shouting from the kitchen front room area, went back in, couldn't see him, had to feel around and follow Eugene's voice, carried him outside of the house, called the emergency services, and in that process, the fire really took hold, the windows blew out, and we understand Eugene's doing okay now. He's going to have to deal with the trauma, obviously, of losing his house. But he is alive, and Keelan got out of life as well, and is well back at work that evening, if you don't mind. But what a hero. Well done, Keelan. We really do appreciate that. And I think Desi's the granddad as well, who spotted the smoke to begin with. So it was a double effort from the two lads there. Brilliant stuff. McGrath's the big loser here, or is the big loss here at home, says a listener. So hopefully he has big influence in Europe. I would like to see where the fruits of any influence at all in Europe, to be honest with you. Hi, where are we here? Hi, who could have possibly thought it was a good idea to start these on the Monday afternoon of rally weekend? Absolutely insane levels of traffic, not fair in residents or many of our visitors. So what is this in relation to? It must be traffic works that's happening. I don't know, because last night was another big night for the rally in certain places. I think. Hi, can you ask why a lot of dog poop bins have been removed in Buncrana, i.e. the ones at O'Doherty's, Keep the Back Shore, Ludden Beach, to name just three? Don't know, because we were talking yesterday about the Buncrana Tidy Towns. Not that we were talking to the Buncrana Tidy Towns, but it was about Buncrana being classed as more littered than it was previously. Dog poo was one of the issues. So this listener is saying, why have some of the bins removed? Greg, I was reading about sunglasses, which I see you were wearing at the weekend. Sunglasses make your body think it's sleep time and your body stops producing melatonin, which protects your skin from the sun. Maybe try a peaked hat next time to block the sun. I would have not, trust me, if I'd thought I'd had sun block and everything. I actually wasn't wearing sunglasses. That's the eyes naturally protecting themselves. In relation to Buncrana again, yes, very harsh words in this survey. I'm a walker and I know how the town is kept. It's immaculate. We're very proud of everyone, especially the Tidy Towns volunteers. I'm so upset for everyone, but we, the people of Buncrana, are proud of you all. Hear, hear. As it relates to the rally, we must give thanks to the Gardaí, who had a large presence and made sure that the rally went on safely. And I think the one thing, and this is not a criticism of previous operations around the rally, but it seemed to me that the operation this year was proactive, more proactive than reactive, and I think that really paid dividends. We were in Garton on Sunday. A man opened up his field and let everyone part for free. Shout out to you. Fair play. Good stuff indeed. Hi, Greg. Do you know if the remaining games in the championship will be on free-to-air TV? Thanks, Kevin. That came in from Kevin yesterday, and Kevin, it was only in the afternoon that it was resolved. The Saturday semi-finals are on GEA Go. The Donegal semi-final and Derry Kerry, which I think obviously the games I'm going to be more interested in, they are on free-to-air TV, RTE, effectively on Sunday. So if you can't get to the game, and it's a tough old game to get to, it's a very early start if you want to get down to Croke Park, and people really only knew yesterday evening. It's a lot to plan in a very short space of time, but there you go. Hi, Greg. Donegal has had massive money put into cycle lanes across the county, yet cyclists aren't even using them when they're available. Should the cyclists not be legally obliged to use them? Cyclists are always giving out. They're at risk. Taxpayers' money paying so much for cycle lanes to keep the cyclists safe, yet they're not being used. Here's the thing for you. I was down in Dublin on Friday, and no one cycles. All the talk, you know, when we're up here and we hear about the cycle lanes and Eamon Ryan and the Greens. Now, this is just a snapshot, right? Don't get me wrong. No one is cycling. Everyone's in buses, trams, or in cars. I saw very, very, very few cyclists. They're building all this infrastructure, and there doesn't seem to be a base there of cyclists. And furthermore, scooters, really. No one's on scooters down there as well. I thought, stupidly, naively, that when the new rules came in as it relates to scooters, that there would just be a plethora of them, that people would say, all right, this is a way I can get to and from here. I haven't seen much of that. But just in Dublin, very few people cycling, very few scooters. Most people walking, cars, buses and Lewis. And it made me think, well, what's all this talk, constant talk about cycle lanes in Dublin? No one's bloody cycling. But anyway, that was only me there for... a day and a bit. Greg, Rip Off Ireland is alive and well. Was it pink? And the price of everything in the Aviva was extortionate. Re-sunburn. Try Sudocrem. It works. Yeah, well, I have some aloe vera, and that's pretty good. It's easing off now, thankfully. I'm not, it's just I was stupid. You know, it's horrible when you're stupid, and then you have to come into work and show everyone you're stupid. Yeah, pink was $7.50 for a pint. And I think chips were like $5.50 cold. They were cold as well. Yeah, it did seem quite expensive. But that being said, listen, the days of five or a pint, £3 for chips and all that kind of stuff, or getting into a nightclub for £12 are gone. Local filler station charging €6.50 for five sausages. That's a €19.50 for a pound of sausages, €6.50 for five sausages. Oh, my God. Yeah, I used to like two sausages and a jambon just as a snack now and again, but jambons cost a fortune. And two sausages and a jambon went from like €3 to €6 or €7. So suffice to say, I'm tight and I don't have jambons and sausages anymore. Draw, but subject to the avoidance of repeat pairings from earlier in the championship, so Donegal couldn't play Armagh or Derry. Okay, well, that leaves our who we could play. That leaves who we could play in... short supply. Quick break. Back after these. Now, the Road Safety Group Park is a national organisation initially established by Donegal woman Susan Gray. It promotes awareness, responsibility and care on our roads. Susan Gray is with us. Good morning, Susan. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for asking me on.
No, it's good to have you. Now, Finding Your Way is a information document that we've talked about before, and it's given to families of road traffic victims, and I think I spoke to you years ago, and it was about sort of calling on the Guard or the RSA, if I remember correctly, Susan, to ensure that this document is given to those that need it. And that work was done, wasn't it? Is this generally now given to people in the tragic situation of a fatal road traffic collision?
Well, Greg, it was first produced in 2012 after many meetings with Garda headquarters, coroners, DBP's office, and they helped us greatly, the ambulance service, in making sure we had the right information on the guide to help families understand the procedure after a fatal crash. Now, in 2015, the Garda Commissioner then agreed to collect copies from us, say 200 or 300 at a time, and direct the superintendent in each region that when a fatal crash would happen, that two guides would be given to the family liaison officer appointed to the particular family. Very often we get calls from families, Greg, that haven't received a booklet from their family liaison officer. We've reported it time and time again to Garda headquarters. They changed the system, and but very recently a family that lost their son did not receive a copy. So our members in Dublin post out copies. We store them in Dublin, and they post out copies at their own expense to the families that didn't receive ones. So we have asked, Greg, that anybody listening that's lost a loved one, to please inform us if they have not received this valuable document.
Or indeed misplaced it, Susan, because obviously it's always such a traumatic experience that something like this could be very easily mislaid. So even if that's the case and someone very sadly needs information, get back in contact with PARC. Now, Finding Your Way, as you said, initially launched in 2012, it's been updated. So what's new in this booklet now?
Well, first of all, it's always brave families that fund the guide. We must never forget that. Mm-hmm. And we can't thank them enough. The new edition includes the new law that Minister Jack Chambers brought in last month, testing for drugs in all fatal and serious road crashes. So in 2011, after a 5-year campaign, we got mandatory testing for alcohol in all fatal crashes. Leo Varadkar brought it in at the time. And then in 2014, we reported that some people were feeling an injury at the scene. Mm-hmm. And once again, Leo Varadkar brought in mandatory testing in the hospital for alcohol and drugs. So now Minister Jack Chambers has brought in mandatory alcohol and drug. Alcohol was in, but mandatory drug testing at the scene. So we felt people needed to know that. Mm-hmm. And there was a few other additions that we had to put into it. And very importantly, on the inside back cover, the families that have funded the guide, the various additions over the years, we dedicated that page to them with photographs of their loved ones.
And this year, it's sponsored by the family of Geraldine and Louise Clancy and Dylan Killaly, Maher's family. It's in their memory as well.
Yeah, Noel Clancy lost his wife and daughter in a road crash involving an armored company learner driver in December 2015. And Dylan Killaly, Maher's family, who's only 21, he lost his life in a crash last November 2023, so only 7 months ago. And a family has recently contacted us. She lost her son at the beginning of this month. It's heartbreaking. Now, they got a guide and from the family liaison officer, and they said the guards praised the guide and went and said, you should read this guide. You have all the information you'll need, and keep going back to it and educating yourself. So the families keep contacting us, Greg. Here's a few of their comments. The Finding Your Way booklet was a great guide on what to expect following the tragic death of her mother. This to us was invaluable. I was a Meath family. Another one, the Finding Your Way booklet, could never be valued. It allows us to open doors that we didn't even know were there. Waterford family. My family and I received much help from the Park Road Safety Group, and especially the park booklet. This guide is full of useful information and contact telephone numbers. The best free booklet we ever read. Many thanks. Another one, due to shock, information wasn't being retained, so this guide helped greatly. It was also a great source of other avenues and services to seek if we need them. And another one, the Finding Your Way guide was a great source of information and guidance at the darkest time in our lives, Monaghan family. And the search for truth has been greatly assisted by this booklet produced by Park Road Safety Group. It's sad reading that out, but at the same time, it's great that, you know, we're empowering people. We tell them what questions to ask and what information they're entitled to, and to seek meetings with agencies.
Mm.
And it really does help them. So,
for sure. And I think really, you know what's amazing too, that those families that in their darkest times that this booklet helped for them to actually reach out and give it that endorsement. I think that says it all, really. Susan, just remind us once again, obviously we hope that anyone who may need this booklet is given it, but if it's misplaced or if they don't receive it, is it to contact Park directly?
Yeah, you can contact us through our Facebook page or Twitter, or contact myself directly on 086-377-3784.
Okay. Susan,
and we will get booklets out to you.
Keep up the great work, all of you involved with Park. Thank you very much indeed. That's Susan Gray, founder of Park, promoting awareness, responsibility and care on our roads. Just a follow-up as it relates to our convo with Jared Porter from the Buncrana Tidy Towns. Now, the Buncrana Tidy Towns were involved primarily focused on the Tidy Towns competition, which is separate from the Irish Business Against Litter survey. The Irish Business Against Litter, they just pick towns. You don't know when they're coming. But they only visited Buncrana once. I understood the Tidy Towns come a couple of times and it's a little bit fairer, but they only visited Buncrana once, and it was on Friday the 19th of April at lunchtime, and they spent 2 to 3 hours in the town. So that's what the whole town is judged on, a 2 to 3 hour window on Friday the 19th of April. As I say, I'm consistent in this. I don't overplay the success through for towns and villages because of iBal, but I can't help but wonder how useful it is if Buncrana is described as it is off the back of a 2 or 3 hour window on an afternoon on Friday the 19th of April. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't... I just don't see the benefit of it, really. But anyway, there you go. Hi, Greg. Could you call out the violence that was carried out by the Garda to women and children attending a protest to keep their communities safe, saying violence against women is in the highlights now. Cover it all, not just one case. I'm not familiar with the... oh, right. Maybe you are on about the... interaction between Gardaí and protesters outside the accommodation down the country, is it? Yep. Listen, there isn't a hierarchy here. Any violence against anyone, but particularly women and children, has to be called out. It's unacceptable, of course. I find myself more and more sort of reading an article in a newspaper and not really getting what the story's about. And that's why it's wonderful to do interviews on the radio, because I learn more, and hopefully that's the same for people out there. So 72% of pharmacists dispense unlicensed medicine 1 to 10 times per day due to shortages. Now, what does that actually mean? Well, Margaret O'Doherty is a good friend of the show, pharmacist at Rafo Pharmacy, and she's with us now. Margaret, lovely to speak to you again.
And you, Greg.
Right, so what does that headline mean? 72% of pharmacists dispense unlicensed medicine 1 to 10 times per day due to shortages. Like, it sounds really irresponsible and dangerous. Is that what the headline's telling us, or what? What is it actually saying?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's irresponsible and dangerous, but it adds risk to the dispensing process, to the supply of medicines process, which obviously is a highly regulated activity. That's pharmacists are regulated, manufacturers are regulated, wholesalers are regulated. And the whole purpose of the licensing system is to make sure that what you get when you hand in your prescription is a medicine that's been fully tested and is you can have total confidence in it. When there's a shortage, sometimes we have to use something that is what's called unlicensed. Unlicensed doesn't mean that it's totally untested. It's usually a product that's licensed in another EU country or licensed in the UK. It's often a product that we've used many times before, so we can have total confidence in that product. So it's not, you know, it's not irresponsible to supply an unlicensed product. It would be more irresponsible to leave the patient without anything.
But how do unlicensed medical products end up in the back room of a pharmacist in Ireland?
Well, we obtain unlicensed products from, there are suppliers who are actually licensed to supply unlicensed products, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's so the people that we buy them from are licensed wholesalers or even directly from the manufacturers in other EU countries. Unlicensed means it doesn't have a license in Ireland. As I say, it's usually licensed in either another EU country or the UK. That's where the main source of these unlicensed medicines are. The problem is if obviously we're sourcing from another EU country, we're getting something that's packaged in a foreign language, which, you know, most of us don't speak. So the information that's supplied with it, you can't read it. That's where we sort of start getting into problems with these medicines.
Yeah, so really, you're given, not you, so I'm using that generic, so pharmacies are giving patients medicine that might be licensed elsewhere but is unlicensed here. And if the truth be told, particularly if it's coming from Spain or Portugal or France, the actual safety information, I presume it would be related orally at the time of handing it over, but back in the house, people have medicines where the warnings about dosage and all that type of stuff, that very well could be in a foreign language.
That's exactly what's happening more and more, particularly since Brexit, because before Brexit, most of our unlicensed medicines came from the UK, so they still had the information in English, and they, you know, so it wasn't really that big a deal, so to speak. I mean, obviously, if you get something that's licensed in the UK, it's much easier than something that's licensed in Spain or Greece or wherever.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of one or two sort of medicines that are in short supply and the alternatives that are given?
Well, this year we've had some problems with antibiotics because last winter, the winter before that, there was a big problem with antibiotic supply. And this year, Germany bought up a stockpile of antibiotics to have in case the same problem arose, and that led to a shortage then across the rest of Europe. So particular antibiotics we've had problems accessing this year, and again we're dependent on getting sources. Some of them were released then from the German stockpile.
But just in relation to that one example, and we'd love another one, it's crazy. That's not very EU-ish, is it? That's not very sort of, we're all part of the EU team when you've got one big state buying up drugs for its members at the expense of other members.
Well, it's not, and it's something that I know people, I spoke to some of the EU candidates during the election, it is something that the hope is that we would actually have an EU-wide supply system.
Yeah.
That the licensing would be through the EU, and that, as we did with COVID vaccines, they were all bought centrally and then distributed to the member countries. So certainly something like that, but getting 26 people countries to agree on something isn't always that easy. So
No, especially when the most influential benefit most from the status quo. So any
well,
other...
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. And I mean, that's the other problem we have is, of course, because every country is trying to cut their medicines bill and to buy their medicines as cheaply as possible, there then becomes an incentive for the supplier to put it into the countries that are willing to pay more. So that that has been a big factor. We've seen a lot of the older, cheaper drugs actually just going off the market. They're not available anymore.
But it's not even just the price, it's the scale too. So smaller population countries like ours, even if we overpay, you know, we're still not going to be able to compete with Germany if we don't overpay, even if we overpay more than them, because purely in terms of the amount they're buying.
Basically, we're at the end of the supply chain. Yeah. Although surprisingly, most of these medicines are actually made in Ireland because we're a major player in the pharmaceutical industry. But the medicines that are being made in Ireland are being made for export, you know, not to supply the Irish market. Mm.
So just in terms of medicines in short supply, there's at least 344 products. Now, we don't have cornflakes in short supply. We don't have electric cars in short supply. We don't have TVs in short supply, washing machines, dishwashers, anything else that anybody confuses. I can't think of any product at the moment that is in short supply. Yet medicines are life-saving medicines, life-enhancing medicines. Surely this is a manufactured shortage, is it? Is someone playing games somewhere? Because at some point, the pharmaceutical companies, if they had the will, could surely ramp up production to match demand.
It's not that easy to ramp up production to match demand. You would think it might be, but because it's such a regulated process, if something goes wrong in that process, so you could have a manufacturer making a batch of tablets, hundreds of thousands of tablets, and they don't pass quality control for some reason, there's something wrong with them. That could be 6 months' supply that's just gone. Mm. And then it takes several months to make the next batch, because what happens is the factory has gone on to making something else. They make their products in batches, about 3 to 6 months supply of one drug at a time. They make that, then they go on to make the next one. So the way it's done is what they call a just-in-time system.
Yeah.
So that they're making what they think the demand will be. But there can be spikes in demand and peaks in demand. And the system doesn't have enough resilience to cope with those peaks and troughs sort of thing.
I get you. So half of pharmacists are not comfortable with dispensing so many unlicensed medicine, which I think is really quite significant. So we don't have any impact right over the supply. We know what the demand is. We are sort of, you know, takers. We're not negotiators. So we have to wait until such time as there's medicines available to us. So as I might say, half of pharmacists not happy with the level of dispensing of unlicensed medicine. Is there anything within our control that could benefit this situation?
Well, I think, I suppose what we would like most of all is to see that when there are problems, that the supply chain will be managed so that the people most in need get them. Mm. At the minute, it's the sort of the people who shout loudest or the people who have the most clout, or you can just happen to be lucky and have stock at the time. So to actually manage, I mean, shortages are a feature of pharmaceuticals. As I say, it's a worldwide problem. It shows no sign of going away. So we have to manage the problem. Mm-hmm. When if a company knows that they're going to have a problem down the line.
But what about, say, for instance, if there was more thought given by GPs as to prescribing different types of drugs and not just one that is particular, you know, sort of a bit of a nuanced approach to that, or more latitude for pharmacists to switch out drugs to manage their supplies? Would that have any material impact on sort of saving the stocks of the most in-demand drugs?
It's certainly one thing that pharmacists have been begging for, is for the ability to make changes when something is in short supply, to supply an equivalent drug, what they call a serious shortage protocol. They have it in the UK. It works very well. At the minute, if I don't have something, I have to send a message to the doctor to say, we don't have X, you know, can I give Y? And then, you know, a few hours later, they'll come back to me, yeah, that's fine. And this goes on, this back and forth goes on all day, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's a terrible waste of both pharmacists' time, doctors' time, and patients' time that they're having to call back and so on. So certainly if we had the ability that when they say, well, when X is in short supply, you can give Y, which is the equivalent drug. Usually it's just by a different manufacturer. Yeah. So, you know, it's very close to it.
It just makes sense.
Something
you see, I think
that would make things a lot easier.
We can certainly sort of say, well, this needs to be done at a European level or this needs to be done at a global level. But if we're not getting the simple things right at a national and local level to alleviate some of these problems, it would make you wonder. Well, hopefully the calls from the likes of you, Margaret, and others in the industry will not fall on deaf ears and something is done. Thanks for helping us understand that a bit more and explaining it to us, Margaret.
Well, I hope it made some sense to you.
No, it's 100%. No, I get it 100% now. Thank you very much indeed. That's Margaret O'Doherty, pharmacist at Refoe Pharmacy and a regular contributor to us here at Highland Radio. A listener says, hi, I used to get 2 boxes of tablets every month, but now it's 3 boxes, as they say they can't get them now. 3 boxes, and the price went from 3.0 to 4.50. They're making more money out of the poor people. So that sounds to me like to get the same amount of tablets that you used to get in a 2 box, that you have to get 3 boxes now. So it's the same amount of tablets, am I correct here? But they're charging you an additional 50%, 150, for the tablets because there's an extra box, but the same amount of tablets. Have I read that correctly? That is, that doesn't make sense. Back after the news and obituary notices, Community Garda information, and we'll sort of get a rundown of sort of the Garda activity around Letterkenny post rally as well as everything else.